Hello and welcome to episode 110 of Speak Beastie for April 5th, 2020. I'm Oreo.
I'm Marjolaine.
And I'm Shannon. Hi.
Hello, you guys. Interesting times we live in, isn't it?
Yeah.
We were all talking before the show, but we're the three of us pretty much all under lockdown in our different countries.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are.
Yeah. Marjolaine gets to keep me for a while in the same time zone.
Yes, that was the plan.
Oh, so you're behind all of this.
Of course.
Hey, it means that we have a lot more time to podcast.
Yeah.
And more time to watch the Fantastic Beasts movies.
And also more time to wait for the next film, because obviously that's kind of postponed now.
Yes.
Well, yeah. But it's a good thing that they reacted quickly before starting the beginning of shooting, because we will see with the Phoenix Register, but
I hope all of our listeners are staying safe, staying inside, washing your hands,
listening to this podcast.
And we hope that the last episode, the bonus episode, give you a little bit of a fun time.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that we have news, though.
I know. Multiple.
I'm a bit shocked, too. But yeah, I think we can start with the Phoenix Register.
Yeah.
So yeah, now for the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint. Just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs knees and how.
The first news would be a bit old when the episode comes out. But we send our love to Alison Sudol, who shared on her Instagram about 10 days ago that she got a virus, untested, but probably the one that you all know. And but she's good. She is already feeling better. But we're thinking about her and we're thinking about all of you. We already said that. But I think when I saw this news, I said... earlier, I thought, okay, that's one more proof that it was a good thing that they stopped before they begin to film. But yeah.
Yeah, well, we had already seen that they weren't filming. But yeah, she would have been sick about the time that they were like, yeah, we're not filming. So that might have been why.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
I think but so, that's, yeah. Because that was... Yeah. A little over 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah. She is talking about her time in London and how she was very careful. But yeah, mm-hmm. So we have another piece of news, a bit more focused on the future, I guess. Because Dan Fogler gave an interview to Sci-Fi Wire, and the article is from March 26th. So... We are recording the day after that, so that's the freshest news that we could have.
It's our freshest news ever.
It's been a while since we had fresh news from the day before recording. So, yeah, and in this interview, he talks a bit about the new movie script. So I select a few quotes, And the first one I think is the most interesting, so I quote him. I can say I read the script and the character development is really lovely and it's very similar to the feel of the first movie, which I think is great. End of quote. So I think he's not the only one who think that it is great.
That makes me so happy.
So yeah, very similar to the feel of the first movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope so. I like the first movie.
So, yeah, but I think that's the first time that we have an actor commenting on the script compare it with the other film. Because I think we rapidly touch upon what Alison said on the bonus episode, I think. But, yeah, she had a more depressing quote about the fate of her character. So... So it's good that we have some joy too in this movie. If it's similar to the first movie, I think that means that it will not be too dark. I don't know.
I'm not sure. The next quote not that sure. you have in here is kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, because the next one, and I'm quoting, it's leading toward this massive war with the backdrop of World War II. So you can just imagine epic battle scenes are coming. Yeah, well...
I like that World War II is just the backdrop.
Yeah.
Like, it's not this massive thing that happened everywhere.
Yeah. But it made me think again of when the next movie will take place. Because if they are talking about World War II...
We would jump forward quite a bit.
Yeah. So...
I mean, it said leading toward this massive war.
Yeah. So it doesn't necessarily have to be wartime yet, but I would still kind of guess we jump into 1930s.
Yeah.
Also, about time to jump into 1930s, I suppose.
Yeah. We are stuck in 2 years since I don't know how many actual years. But
it's been 84 years.
That we are stuck in 27.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the last quote is not directly focused on the plot, but I think it was interesting and a bit fun. So I quote, to help himself get into Jacob's headspace, Fogler listened to a lot of music from the 20s and the 30s, the retro decades in which Fantasy Beasts movies are set. And so they quote Dan, you can find a song that just sums up everything that will just speak to you and it will just put you in the right place you need to be for the scene, he said. A lot of songs are about heartbreak and that's at the center of Jacob and Queenie's relationship.
I like that. I mean, I don't like the heartbreak, but I like that he listens to 20s and 30s music.
Yeah, I think we should ask him his playlist.
I'd love a playlist.
Yeah.
Dan Fogler presents the official Fantastic Beasts playlist.
That would be really cool, actually.
Yeah. We laugh, but that would be awesome.
That would be awesome, yeah. He should start a playlist on Spotify.
Yeah, what else is he doing right now?
The only other question would be, does Spotify have enough 1920s and 1930s music?
I'll make a playlist.
Okay. Thank you, Shannon, for saving us.
Okay. And I'll still title it Dan Fogler's playlist. Shall we take it to the Owl Post?
Yes.
Today, we got this tweet from Mr. XY on Twitter about episode 108, where we were talking about like Credence and Credence theories and stuff. So Mr. XY said, a human created through alchemy is called a homunculus. Rowling used this term in the Crimes of Grindelwald screenplay to describe the chupacabra. We also see a homunculus on this cover, which if you find Mr. XY's tweet, the cover is of a spellbinding guide to the films, Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts. And they've got a little arrow pointing at the homunculus on the cover, which is...
Oh, yeah.
Looks just kind of like a thing in a bottle, but
yeah, yeah, a little guy in a bottle, yeah.
Yeah, kind of a skeletal.
If you can't find an image with an arrow on it, it's on the right hand side of the cover, just kind of above Newt's scarf.
Next to this crystal ball looking thing. It's like partially cut off. Yeah, another theory about Credence being a homunculus is from at HP4Writers, and then they linked a YouTube video. So if you do find their tweet, you could watch that. But then they suggested that we do a homunculi in the Newt case later. And I think that's a good idea. I think that, I mean, you know, homunculus. I mean, we hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I'm really happy that we have this outpost, because I already saw a couple of YouTube videos about this theory of the homunculus. So when I listened to the episode, I was, oh, but... When you're talking about alchemy and creating a human, I couldn't point the technical stuff behind this homunculus, but I remember. And when you will see that the reference that he's quoting in the screenplay, we will talk about that today. So
so just to give a little bit more background on what a homunculus is, according to Wikipedia. It is a representation of a small human being popularized in 16th century alchemy and 19th century fiction. It has historically referred to the creation of a miniature, fully formed human. So Credence is not a miniature human. Yeah. But, I could skip that little bit of it. But yeah, that would be interesting to talk more about later.
Yeah.
So thank you for that tweet, Mr. XY.
Tweets being the outpost of the future.
Tweets are the outpost of the now.
Correct. But if I'm in the 1920s, then it's still the future. All right. So we did this before. What we're going to do now again. And when we did this before, Michael and I recorded a 3-hour episode, so we're doing this better this time. So we're doing another movie deep dive, because we'll have some time on our hands.
When we did it before, we did it of the first movie.
Yeah. So this time we're doing a Crimes of Grindelwald deep dive, and we essentially cut up the movie in 10-minute chunks. So as we're starting today, this will be the first 10 minutes of Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. And if you want to follow along in the script book, that would be scenes 1 to 18, just after Leeta says, "Do you remember?" Just to give you...
So I would recommend watching that scene or, you know, reading the screenplay real quickly before. Like, we're going to recap stuff that happens, but... might be a little bit easier to follow along with what we're saying if you watch it or read it or both.
Yeah, because this is an audio podcast, so
so at least so much we can do.
And also, we don't want to have copyright battles with Warner Brothers.
Yes, please.
We will go in deep dive into the script too, and analyzing every differences and every mention that would be interesting to quote, because I guess not everyone has the script or did read it, so
we'll definitely draw out like the differences between film and script, and why the script kind of gives you more insight. And
reading the script for this first scene was very helpful. I was like, oh, that's what happens.
So the movie obviously starts with a Warner Brothers logo, but I know Marjolaine gave us the info with what the book starts, so
because like for the first script, this one is dedicated to someone, and this time it's to Kenzie, so it refers to Mackenzie, Joe's second daughter. So yeah, and the first one, I don't note the name, but it was basically the inspiration for Newt. But yeah, this time it's more personal. And this script for Crimes of Grindelwald has a foreword by David Yates, and there was no foreword in the first script. But once I said that, that's all that is to say, because it's not really interesting. It's just all good words for Joe and the story and how amazing it is. And so nothing too good deep.
All right. So as I said, the film starts with the Warner Brothers logo. Big surprise. It's dark and gloomy. I mean, David Yates is directing, so big surprise.
takes me back to the good old days of the last four Harry Potter films.
Where everything was dark.
This film's darker than the last one. Yeah.
We see the logo flying into the screen. There's like thunder and lightning, and then it fades into the new Wizarding World logo, you know, the one with the many wands, and there's some more lightning, and we have the familiar music, Hedwig's theme.
Yeah, it starts with Hedwig's theme, and for the first movie it was this theme, the Harry Potter theme, if we can relate it to the other movies. But just after that, it starts with the new theme for the Fantastic Beasts. But for the second movie, it's not the Fantastic Beasts theme. It will come later. But it's this new theme, very dark. And actually, it's the theme which is related to the storyline of Credence and Corvus Lestrange. So, and Lita by association. So, yeah.
Which I think makes sense. Sorry. Because, you know, well, Half-Blood Prince has Dumbledore's Farewell as the, like, main theme. And then Deathly Hallows 2 has Lily's theme as the, like, main theme. Yeah. So I think it makes sense to have, like the Credence theme for this one.
But it will make even more sense when we will talk about the deleted scene at the end of our discussion. Because... Yeah. This theme is not related to what's going to happen in the opening scene. So,
Yeah, because the opening that we get here now is Makuza in the darkness. And it says American Ministry of Magic on screen, which it also says in the script. And the first character we actually get to see is Grindelwald. And he is...
This son of a gun.
He sits on a chair, not moving, kind of like you're not really sure if he's still properly alive, but just like sits there. And we kind of learn through the in the movie that we are a fly that's like flying towards him, and we follow that fly, that he has some sort of protection field around him, and you can't touch him. And my first thing was like, what sort of magic is that?
There's a lot of what sort of magic is that in this first scene?
And actually the fly is not mentioned in the script because, I took the quote from the script. So Grindy is magically fixed to a chair. The air shimmers, charged with spells. And that's all to describe this old scene with the fly, the
force. The fly is a much better way to demonstrate what's happening.
I'm picturing the David Yates, so I don't know who read the script and who were wondering, okay, the air shimmers, how do I picture that?
I mean, they could have
screen?
Just had the little dome around him be visible, but the fly kind of better demonstrates it. And then when the little chupacabra comes out, he gets to pluck the fly out of the air.
Yeah.
And of course, this isn't Grindelwald. This is Abernathy. This guy's just Grindelwald.
Yeah.
And then Abernathy, who is actually Grindelwald, looks in.
Yeah, that's what we see next, that Abernathy is coming. And I kind of noted that, like, the way that the Chupacabra walks towards quote-unquote Abernathy was maybe the first hint that there was a switch happening.
That's true. We don't see the Chupacabra until fake Abernathy comes to the door and looks in, and then the Chupacabra's like, hey, Dad.
Yeah, because obviously he's quite clingy.
Yeah, he's doing this thing with his head, like, hey, Daddy.
Notice me, I'm here. Also, I like what Marja put in here as Abergrindy. I think that makes sense. Because otherwise we'll always say Abernathy, who's actually Grindelwald, or Grindelwald, who's actually Abernathy.
So Abergrindy and Grindy Naffy.
So Abergrindy is Abernathy, but actually Grindelwald. And
Grindy Naffy. Grindelwald, but actually Abernathy.
Why do they keep disguising people? It's so hard for us. And that's also, Marceline, you put that in here, the script says about the chupacabra.
Yeah, because to introduce the chupacabra, it's there that we have the description, part lizard, part homunculus, a blood-sucking creature of the Americans.
So, nice going, yeah. Americans.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I don't know what does it mean, creature of the Americans? I don't understand, but...
Well, it's a South American creature.
Yeah, but it's very, very general. Like, it's of the Americans.
Well,
I thought it was from Mexico or something like that.
Yes. I mean, I think just kind of South America in general.
Mm.
This says but wouldn't its first Mexico be Middle America? In Puerto Rico. Yeah, that's true.
That's like probably why it South says America. Americans.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, I think even like it's, there's myths about it in parts of like the US and stuff. It's all over the place. It does not look like a lizard in like all the stuff that I've sort of read
it's
about.
It's more like
it.
A dog. Yeah, it's more like a dog or something.
Or just,
like that.
Or like humanoid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Antonio definitely is dog like with his mannerisms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the way he looks, but.
Basically, you know. Lizard like would not be my first description of the chupacabra.
Okay.
But
I see a kind of reptile, but I don't know about lizard, but I see a reptile.
Yeah. And homunculus is also an interesting way.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah, that's a peculiar word to use because I don't know many people know what a homunculus is.
Yeah.
So.
Rowling was just like, I'm going to use these words. You just have to look it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it is known. We're getting into a mini newt case here. It's known for sucking goat blood. That's the chupacabra's whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I
guess we did a newt case about the chupacabra once, no?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
A while ago.
Yeah.
Because it is a pretty popular mythological creature. But yeah, so we do see this little chupacabra. I mean, it is a baby chupacabra. We do see him kind of suck blood later.
Yeah.
But do you see, even if we consider that homunculus means little human, do you see a human part in Antonio?
No, he just looks
because
like
I don't. Yeah.
I don't know. It's a very interesting, like, description in the book, translation into the movie. I don't know. I always forget that he's a chupacabra because it's just like, that's just not what I pictured chupacabras.
Yeah.
Also interesting that like Grindelwald has a chupacabra, which is an American creature. It's like, when did he get this? Where was it
in
the first movie?
He was in America for a while.
Yeah.
In graves and stuff.
He's in Northern America though.
I mean, you don't know what he did before he...
It's true.
Became Graves.
I don't know anything about what he did.
I doubt that he just kind of waltzed into New York and was like, I'll be that guy.
I don't know. He could have. He just waltzes into France and is like, I live here now.
True, but true. He wasn't impersonating someone.
No.
I think you need to do a little research if you're impersonating someone, at least someone as important as Graves in the ministry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, Graves didn't had a chupacabra, I think. And this one is a baby, so since Grindelwald is in jail for a few months.
But also, like, the Ministry of Magic is in New York, and he's, like, head Ouro, so I'll imagine his job includes a lot of traveling to other places.
It's true.
Because he's there for the whole of the U.S. So he might have picked up a chupacabra somewhere.
That's true. Okay. We did do a new case about the chupacabra. It's episode 81. The C word, if anyone is interested in going back.
That was a good episode.
Yeah, I remember.
It was the coward versus crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Amy, Lizzie S, and Megan. Yeah. Throwback Thursday.
So, are we ready to move on from the
chupacabra? We need to.
That's why this type of episode is three
look at
hours.
That. We got to the first beast of the movie and got sidetracked for like 10 minutes. Typical. All right.
Yeah, that's why we're now doing 10 minutes and not 15, so maybe we'll do better.
We've got a lot of time to do this one. So.
True.
All right.
So next up, we are introduced to Spielman, and we're reintroduced to our favorite president,
yes.
President Pickery. We're not sure if she's drunk in this scene, but I'm sure Shannon can give us some
insight.
She
probably is.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely will have the proof that she is.
Yeah, so we meet Spielman for the first time. He's an old white dude, and I will instantly forget what he looks like.
He's a German dude. Like, the actor is also German.
Yes, which they say in the script, Germanic, so yeah. That's purposeful.
Yeah, but, like, Grindelwald is supposed to be Germanic, and they cast an American guy, so...
Yeah, so...
Just saying, so I'm happy that when they cast real people.
Germans are bad, so... That's why they're Germanic.
So what do you think about Spielman's accent in comparison with Grindelwald's accent?
So much better.
Well, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's just a real German accent because the dude's German.
Yeah.
Just like I'm German and have a German accent.
It's one of those accents where it's like, I almost forget he has an accent because it just sounds so natural because it is. It's just like, yeah. That's what he sounds like.
You put in here, Shannon, that...
Yes, so they tell us right away with some exposition that it's been 6 months, because Spielman says, you'll be glad to be rid of him, and Pickery says, we'd be more than happy to keep him here in custody, and Spielman says, 6 months are enough. It's time for him to answer for his crimes in Europe.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been 6 months since the first movie.
And we have the title of the movie with the crimes of Grindelwald.
It's true. The crimes.
Roll credit.
No,
they should have just put like the credit right there, like the crimes of Grindelwald. Like, oh, I get it.
So they're walking down the corridor until they reach the cell where Grindelwald is being held, and Abernethy greets them.
Abergrindy.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I've completely grown that.
That's good.
We've talked too long about a chupacabra. I've already forgotten what we did great on.
I just want to make sure we remember that it is Grindelwald.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a good show. And my first... kind of point here is it normal that, like, I assume, like, the highest security prison cell that they have has, like, two windows?
I didn't even think about it until you wrote that note, and I was like, yeah, why does it have two little sliding windows?
Convenient.
I'm guessing it's just for, like, the aesthetics in the movie, because it looks cool when they both slide it open simultaneously and shut it simultaneously, but yeah.
It is funny. Yeah, I can't think of a practical reason why, unless it's really like, we always need two people here. Like, I don't know.
But then just make a bigger window.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So then, they look in at him, and Abergrindy's like, he's secured and ready to travel. Spielman observes that they've thrown a lot of magic at him. And Pickery says, we've had to change his guard 3 times. He's very persuasive. And also they removed his tongue. But I was like, what was he persuading these guards about? And they've had to change the guards. Like, are the other guards bad now? Like, what happened to these guards?
I think it's probably what we see later in the film, where he's just like, why should we hide? Why shouldn't we be? And I think especially
probably.
Because in America, there's a much stronger separation between muggles and wizards than it is in Europe. It's probably fairly easy to get some momentum.
But yeah, I was wondering if like these guards actually then went and like tried to do anything bad.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why would they have
Or they're just sitting in the break room later and they're like, have you talked to this Grindelwald guy? I think he might have some good ideas. And then Pickery was like, nope. Switch them out.
Yeah, maybe they are in the cages that we will see later.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe
Pickery locked them in.
I mean, they have a lot of space in that prison.
She didn't switch it up enough because Abergrindy happened. So then she says, so we removed his tongue, which is pretty dramatic.
Yeah. And you see Spearman's reaction kind of being like, what?
What now?
No, I don't know for you, but I was really shocked because Serafina was not great in the first movie, but I wasn't picturing a president who torture her. Yeah, but I guess it's.
I mean, they have the death penalty in the American.
Yeah.
I guess that's what her wand can do.
Yeah.
But I mean, also they still have that death penalty thing. Why didn't they just do that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they can't. He has to be put in trade in Europe, so they can't just.
Does he though? I mean, if he's dead, he's dead.
But that's.
I mean, imagine there's this like highly wanted criminal, and like it's captured in a country where you have the death penalty, and they'd be like, you know what? We'll just kill him and save everyone the trouble. And why would you try to ship him around to have him trialed against everything that he's ever done everywhere?
Well, obviously, it's because he's got all these people in his pocket.
Yeah.
To be like, no.
Yeah, but that's also because that's how justice work. they want to have a try. Like, and actually, if you... I can understand, too, that they need to judge him, because if he already has a lot of followers, if you kill him, you just make him a martyr. So that's not good.
I mean, the only very recent example I have against it is US killing Osama bin Laden. No one wanted to trial him.
It's true.
So, like, I'm just saying, I think people would have been fine.
Yeah, no, I'm...
So,
no, I'm,
you know, the rest of these movies is Serafina Pickery's fault, and that's that.
Not that we're surprised. So, they then transport Grindelwald in this kind of weird suspension thingy through the prison, and the other prisoners kind of yell his name.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, are they mad at him? Are they excited about it? I really can't tell.
Yeah, I can't tell either. Is there something in the script? Probably not, is it?
No, it just says prisoners yelling, Grindelwald, Grindelwald. Prisoners chant and bang against the bars.
I think they're cheering, but I'm not sure.
I guess it could be a mix. Like,
yeah. So my other note here is, can we talk about the design of this prison?
Yeah.
It's kind of endless stacks of cages. And first of all, like, why do they need so many of them? Is this like the only prison in the whole of North America?
It is the prison is underneath the government building.
Yeah, like, is that a good choice? Let's break out and then kill the president, because it's like literally upstairs.
It's literally like a dungeon in a castle.
Yeah, I mean, maybe maybe Makuza is the most secure magical place in
I guess so.
Yeah, no one could break out or switch places. Definitely never. Not under Serafina's watch. But we arrive...
Not with my president.
We arrive at like the top of the building, and we get this nice shot from like above the carriage with the six thestrals.
Yeah, and in the script there is 8. So
I think there was enough room for 8.
Yeah, I think so too. It was a bit too much.
So, you know, if you ever wondered how many thestrals it needs for a carriage, it's 6.
And it's funny that they kept 8 in the script.
Yeah, they could have easily changed that.
What a random detail.
And then Pickery has some wise words to say to Spearman before he leaves, and that's, do not underestimate him. Which, you know, would have been good if you followed your own advice.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna... Is it Abergrindy? Yeah. So, Abergrindy hands Spearman the wand in a case. So, several points here. First of all, what's this, like, franchise in cases? Like, are they a bit obsessed with cases?
Well, it's this one, the wand's not actually in there.
Yeah, but he says the wand is in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's like, ooh, it's dangerous. Let's keep it in a case.
Yeah, and then also the second point. Why did they not destroy the wand? Like, we know that later on in Harry Potter, like, obviously Britain, it's common practice that when someone, like, is deemed an outlaw, I suppose, that their law is, their wand is broken in half.
Yeah, so I was wondering if they knew that it was the Elder Wand.
But then why wouldn't they just keep it?
Yeah, I don't know.
I maybe it just wasn't common practice to break wands in America these days. Or maybe, like, it was Abernathy's job to take care of the wand, but Grindelwald already had him under his thumb, and he was like, I won't break it. I'll just... But then, like, he hands it over in front of Serafina, so what... Obviously she knows it's not broken. Yeah. I don't know.
It just kind of felt weird to me that you would keep the wand.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone assumes that Grindelwald is going to redeem himself and become part of society again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think breaking the wand is again the result of a trial. So he didn't have his trial yet.
That's so yeah, it's probably like... Oh, yeah, you're going to go to Europe and they'll try you and then they'll break it.
Yeah, and make it public and make it count.
A show of it.
Mm.
And the next thing that we see that Abergrindy is handing over is the wild, which we later, very much later, learn is the Blood Pact.
Yes, and Abergrindy does not want to hand it over. Pickery has to be like, Abernathy? And he's like, oh, yeah, also this. And in the movie, it's not as obvious that he's, like, hesitant, but in the script, it's, like, after a moment of hesitation, Abernathy releases it.
Yeah, it said that he hanged the blood pact on the chain, and the Spinman tried to grab it, and Abernathy hesitated before releasing it, so...
Yeah. I guess that might have been, like, too obvious in the movie.
Yeah.
But it's subtle enough right now that, like, watching it back, knowing that's Grindelwald, you're like, he doesn't want to give it up.
Mm. Yeah, you understand that it's an important piece of...
But, like, first time through, it just kind of reads as, like, oh, he forgot.
Yeah.
Because he's dumb.
But Abernathy I will say Abernathy because we think that he is Abernathy, but he mm-hmm. acted weird because if we remember the way that Abernathy acted in the first movie, he immediately seems very different from the one that we know from the first movie.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah.
And I mean, we also going into it already knew that, like, just from, like, various news and stuff, that it seemed like he was going to be bad, and we were like, why?
Yeah.
But he's definitely off. So if you had, like, no idea going into this movie that he was gonna be a bad guy, it might be like, what's wrong with him?
Yeah.
Yeah. We then see the carriage being locked with magic, which I always appreciate seeing that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I didn't appreciate as much is the thresholds being whipped. I have here that's the real crime. And justice for Thestrals.
Yeah, they could just have normal reins.
Yeah.
I don't think it doesn't mention a whip in the script.
No.
So why'd they do that?
I don't know. I don't like it. I did kind of count the auras that we see here because mm-hmm. I think it is relevant for later. So we have two auras at the front. The bad guys who whipped the Thestrals. Then we mm-hmm. have two at the back of the carriage. So those four kind of sit on the carriage. And another four follow on brooms.
Yes.
And then we see another two within the carriage.
Yeah.
Which is basically what it says in the book. The two that are in the carriage are referred to as oars one and two, and then everyone else is just kind of like, more oars. It just says more oars follow on broomsticks.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, we then see Abergrindy on top of the building, and then he pulls out the Elder Wand, and that's... I put second hint at the switch, but I suppose it's more like a punch to the face and not so much a hint anymore at this
point. Well, it's at least like, oh, he didn't give them the wand in that case, so... You know, it could have just been Abernathy has the Elder Wand for some reason. I remember before... the movie came out and we had this shot going into discussion about, like, who's holding it? Is it Grindelwald? Is it, like, whatever? And I was like, it has to be Grindelwald. And then you're watching the movie and it was like, all right, well, like, it is.
Yeah. But I remember it was confusing because we had this shot and we also had the shot of Grindelwald inside the carriage. So we were thinking about, okay, it's definitely the same scene, but he can't be at two places on the same time. But yeah, he can.
There's discussion about the sleeve and the hand and whatever. And it's like, well, we weren't wrong.
Yeah.
But there was more to it.
And we then see him apparate to the bottom of the carriage, which I would assume is very hard to apparate. Because
it would be.
Apparate to like a moving object. Yeah. And then, you know, to, I don't know. So like props to that.
Yeah, it's only the first of many impressive magic
prowess
from Grindelwald, I think.
Yeah. We then switch to inside the carriage where we see Spearman with that vial again. And we'll see that vial a lot in the next couple of minutes. So no one can miss that it is important. And that's also when we see the other two Aurors who both have their wands trained at Grindelwald. What do we see?
Grindy Naffy.
Just after Spearman then comments, no more silver tongue, both the audience and Spearman start to realize, okay, something is clearly wrong.
Yeah.
And we see them both switching back to the actual characters, I suppose.
This is interesting knowing that, like, Spearman is in on it in some way, you know? Because it's like, does he know this plan? No. But like, yeah, you know what I mean?
Why do you think he's in on it? I've never had the impression that he's in
really
on it.
In on it, but like, Grindelwald lets him live.
Yeah, but that might just be...
And I don't get why.
I think he just wants to use that at a later point.
Yeah.
Because that dude is still some sort of, like, important guy for the... Either for Germany, Austria, or Switzerland, or for maybe for all three.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also quite usual to have a bad guy leaving one man alive to tell what happened. Because if no one can tell what happened... Because it's a really impressive escape. He's all alone to do all of this stuff, Grindelwald. So that's really impressive. And I think it could be quite funny for Grindelwald to imagine Spearman trying to explain what happened to So just that, I think that's... I can understand why he wants at least one person to explain how impressive he was.
Yeah.
So... what do we think how the, like, disguise worked this time? Because from what we see, I would have said it looks like Polyjuice, just because he just kind of morphs back.
Yeah.
But obviously in the first film, it was a transfiguration of sorts, so I'm not really sure.
I guess it depends on, like, how long they've been switched. Because they've been switched long enough that, like, they removed Abernathy's tongue and not Grindelwald's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And it looks more like Polyjuice for Abergrindy, but less for for the actor Grindelwald, who transformed
quite...
Yeah, that
quite, looks like transfiguration.
Yeah, I could see it being like Abernathy had Polyjuice potion and Grindelwald was just casting a transfiguration spell.
I also put in here when we see Grindelwald changing back, his hair and beard is kind of long, so maybe that hints that the switch is actually more recent.
Yeah.
That he was actually in prison for quite a while.
Yeah. I mean, it has... Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was, like, surprised that they were switched?
At the moment of the switch, or... Because I think when they transform, I think for the past few seconds, I understood what happening. But I think I understood maybe, or maybe I thought that was something weird when they tell that they cut the tongue because I thought, well, Grindelwald definitely needs a tongue for the for the rest of the front of the movies for, so it can't be Grindelwald.
I think for me it was, I didn't necessarily see this exactly coming, but it wasn't also that surprised because obviously we literally end the last movie, the movie before that, with them, you know, like with someone being disguised. So it's not like it feels like a new thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yeah, I feel like I hadn't had time to think like, oh, they're switched, but then it happened and I was like, oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, same, you know. I guess, yeah.
This whole scene happens like really fast.
Yeah.
And dark.
It took us a long time talking to that scene, but we're literally just talking about the first 10 minutes, so yeah.
Yeah.
So we then see Grindelwald apparating to the top of the carriage and he performs like some weird snake magic to get rid of the two auras that are on the front of the carriage. So there's now no one whipping the thestrals because there's no one steering anything.
Yeah, he turns the reins into snakes.
Yeah.
Which is hard to see in the movie.
And then also like, why are snakes always associated with dark wizards?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Yeah. It's a bit cliche, but I guess you can blame the Old Testament because the snake is always the on the bad side. So yeah. But yeah, Rowling is definitely using a lot the snake to impersonate evil. Yeah, with the basilisks, with Slytherin, with everything.
Yeah,
so. With Harry being able to talk to snakes. Kidding. but now obviously because those two auras kind of fall back and fall through the air where the auras and brooms are following the carriage, everyone knows, okay, something's wrong. So we lose the first two auras.
Yeah, and I like the quote from the script, they fall away into darkness.
Well, yeah. So then we get this cool bit of magic where Grindelwald, apparently from outside of the carriage, takes control of all the wands of the auras inside of the carriage and turns them around on them and disintegrates Spielman's wand.
Yeah, that's impressive again.
Yeah, I'm like, where is this spell then? What is it? Like,
if Harry knew that, he couldn't have, you know, something other than Expelliarmus. Like,
yeah.
Hey, I'm not just gonna just like remove the wand, I'll just like destroy your wand.
Like, that seems like it shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's doing that, not he doesn't even need to look at it to do it.
Yeah.
He's not even in the carriage. So
yeah.
Yeah. So that,
and he only disintegrates Spielman's, which is funny.
Yeah, I think he's whole plan was to torture Spielman and leave him living alive after that.
Yeah, I think the trick here is that he wants to get Spielman to open the case. Because Spielman obviously thinks there's another wand in the case.
True.
Yeah.
Doesn't turn out to be anything. I had a note here that when we see Abernathy's face in this scene, I thought he looked fairly worried.
Yeah,
like
I think
he
so
isn't
too.
Really in on the plan.
Like, he probably just knows, oh, hey, I'm gonna break us out, don't worry. Yeah. Which, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, like, why didn't Grindelwald just escape and let Abernathy get taken? I guess he needed the vial back.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's probably why he was so reluctant to give up the vial. Maybe his plan was to leave Abernathy behind if he could keep the vial.
Yeah. Yeah, he was maybe counting on Pickery to forgot that there is not
which,
something
you know, fair
else.
Enough. I would count on Pickery forgetting stuff.
The one time that like she was on top of things, yeah. He's like, oh, damn it.
Yay, Serafina.
I'm sorry I spoke ill of you earlier, Serafina. You did okay.
There was one good thing.
I guess it's also he he just wants to make a show of things, let's
yeah.
be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the movie wants to show us how bad he well, really yeah. is, because we haven't really seen Grindelwald yeah. in full action yet, so.
Yeah, and like you said, he's performing a magic who looks quite unique. We never saw this kind of spells before. And that make me wonder if that's just Grindelwald doing his magic and he's really good at it, or if it's the Elder One who makes its owner capable of yeah. doing this specific form of aggressive magic, because the Elder One was created to be the best in duel. So maybe, yeah, it makes its owner, yeah.
From what we learn in Harry Potter, in the seventh book, where Voldemort has the Elder One, but obviously isn't the owner. And when Lucius says, I've seen you do outstanding magic with this wand, and Voldemort goes back like, I've done my regular magic.
Yeah.
I think the Elder One is probably more powerful, but like if you're an average wizard, it probably wouldn't show that much. But because Grindelwald is obviously an outstanding wizard,
yeah,
it would just probably like magnify his already unique and outstanding magic. Because what we see later, what Dumbledore does with like the whole like fog and like glove and everything, that is magic we've never seen before either.
Yeah, no, true. But I was thinking in the term of really yeah battle magic, yeah, and because the Elder One is, it's the point of the Elder One to do battle magic. So yeah, even if Dumbledore doesn't use it,
I always have the impression that fighting or like battle with magic is a bit odd, because you don't need Avada Kedavra to kill someone. You just need to be more creative. You could like freeze someone and then yeah. like Bombarda or something, which is all totally legal spells. If you're just a bit more creative, it's kind of like the Lego movie where you're like, I mean, I'm not saying it's legal to kill someone, but like
the
spells are legal. but like, you know, it's a bit like in the Lego movie, like when, if you're creative, you can kind of do everything.
Yeah.
Like I think to be good at like duels, it's much more, it's like, it's obviously reflexes and all of that, but it's also like, can you come up with the right choice of spells for the right, like, scenario?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or do you just always do Expelliarmus, because that works?
I mean, you know, whatever works for you, like.
But, yeah. like, when like, the one time we've seen a really, like, or, like, two times we've seen really cool duels, even in the Harry Potter books, when we generally don't see as much fancy magic as we do in this, like, film series. Like Dumbledore and Voldemort fighting in the end of the fifth book, and then McGonagall and Snape dueling in the seventh book, which sadly didn't make it into the film properly. It's
something
they
that
do
bothers
some
me
cool
in,
stuff.
In the duels in movies, and this bothers me with other like movies and shows that do magic stuff, is when it just ends up being like we're throwing light at each other, and sometimes we blast each other backwards.
Mm.
When it's like,
and it is like, you can do so many other things.
When it feels like it's the laser shooters from Star Wars, it's like,
they just they're like, you guys just don't know how to choreograph a fight scene that doesn't have guns. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But back to the scene, we see Spielman is opening said case, which I noted was apparently very easy to open, for it to contain the wand of the bad wizard, but obviously it doesn't, and obviously Abernethy handed it over, so I suppose, oh well, I forgot again what we, fake Abernethy.
Yeah, whatever.
But it's Abernethy now, so that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're good.
And so he obviously, his goal is to retrieve the wand, but there's obviously no wand in there, but... Chupacabra.
Oh, more animal abuse. You're keeping this chupacabra in a tiny case.
Yeah. Wait till we send Newt.
Maybe humans were the real beasts. Guys, it just occurred to me. Hold on.
I mean, they're also trapped in a tiny flying box.
It's true. That's deep. So then the chupacabra leaps out and bites his neck. And the vial falls on the ground, and it just kind of leaves it there in the screenplay. In the movie, Abernathy kind of jumps on him, too, and then picks up the vial from the floor with his mouth.
Yeah, which, because I kind of was like, wait, it's falling to the ground. How does no one trample it and destroys it? Because there's like four people in a tiny carriage. Yeah. Like, it's not super unrealistic that that could happen.
So obviously Abernathy has been told, like, hey, this is really important.
Yeah.
I'm sure he doesn't know what it is, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then again, it must not be so easily destroyed that you could step on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just destroy probably. It. But... That's a good point. There's probably some, like, protection.
But we don't know that at this point.
But we still don't want to lose it somewhere in a flying box in the sky. We jump back out to Grindelwald, who's now whipping the Thestrals, if you needed more reason to think he was the bad guy.
Boo.
And we kind of see this like scene where he tries to outfly the Aurors who are chasing him on the brooms. And what I really loved seeing is the thing where he quote-unquote lands on the like water and lets the Thestral run on the water.
Yeah. That's cool.
And then he has, like, uses the water to fill up the carriage.
Yeah, so in the book it's described as the carriage wheels graze the surface of the water. The broomstick riders are catching up. Grindelwald touches the Elder Wand to the river, and at once the inside of the carriage begins to fill with water.
Yeah, so...
And then he lifts it back up.
Obviously, in the movie, he is too high up to touch, actually, the water, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, he bends down quite... Obviously, to the water.
It's splashing up, though. Yeah. Like. Yeah. So I'm not sure if in the movie he's, like, touching the water or not. No. It's hard to see. A lot of this is me complaining that it's hard to tell what's going on.
Yeah, it's dark.
But I don't think it's that dark. That's...
How bright was your TV when you watched it?
I mean, I look at my computer, so maybe... But
maybe my TV's just dark.
Yeah.
It's also raining and stuff. There's a lot happening on the screen. It's not just that it's physically dark. Like.
Yeah.
Also, could he have just touched it to the rainwater? I guess not.
Guess that's not enough.
Or he just wants to be dramatic. Whatever.
That's also a very good reason. So once the carriage is full with water, he goes back up into the sky. Inside the carriage, everyone pretty much trying to not drown, which I was like, did you know that Abernathy was going to survive this? Did Abernathy know that he had to hold his breath? I don't know.
Definitely not.
We see Abernathy again catching the vial with his mouth. That seems to be his one thing that he's good at.
Well, his hands are bound.
Yeah. But, like, he does that multiple times.
Yes. Yeah, in the screenplay, he only does it once.
He has no tongue, so he has place in his mouth.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, I'm never going to think about that scene ever the same way again. And now we see Grindelwald being the weatherman, because he summons lightning to kill the left Aurors on brooms.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So in the screenplay, it says, Grindelwald swirls his wand in the air toward the surrounding storm clouds. One by one, forks of lightning strike the broomstick riders, knocking each in turn from the sky. Crazy magic.
Yeah, and the music at this time is so great. I love this part of the soundtrack.
My question is, did he generally control the weather so that he was planning to have a thunderstorm night for his escape, because he knew he wanted to be able to do like lightning bolts to kill people? Or was that just luck on his part?
I think that's just luck.
Yeah, he improvised. I think maybe if there was no storm, he would think about another kind of spell.
Yeah, like I feel like him filling the carriage with water is just improvising.
Which I suppose goes back to my point earlier of being, people need to be creative to be good.
Yeah.
And like also at the beginning of the screenplay, it doesn't say that it's storming.
Oh, okay.
I think this is actually the first time it's brought up.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. But, I think in the description when they leave Makusa, it says that it's raining. when the carriage actually leaves. So it's like describing the storm is not a priority in the screenplay as much as like it is in the movie. It's a cool trick. So he's killed 10 people. Because he killed the two oars on the front, the two oars on the back, the two oars inside, and the four on the bows.
Yeah. And I realized that if we're comparing Grindelwald to Voldemort, I don't remember Voldemort to be that effective.
Voldemort was much more talky talk and not actually doing anything. And then losing to a child over and over and over again.
Yeah, Grindelwald is effective when he talks and when he acts. So
yeah.
Sorry, Voldy.
And you notice he doesn't talk while he's acting.
Yeah, that's the trick.
He's like, okay, I'm fighting right now. And then when he's talking, he's like, I'm talking right now. Like, please. Whereas Voldemort's like, Harry Potter, come to die. And it's like, all right, just do it. Like,
he can't. He has to talk about it.
Yeah.
He has to run a commentary of his life.
We're like, we get it. Gosh.
Yeah, I think if we ever needed proof who would win in a fight, Grindelwald versus Voldemort, we have it here.
Yeah.
I don't think Grindelwald would. Voldemort would
be like, well, to be fair, Voldemort does kill Grindelwald. But...
yeah, but Grindelwald is like ancient, has no wand.
Yeah, Grindelwald's just like, whatever.
And
so...
Grindelwald's like, yeah, kill me. I've been rotting in this prison for like, what, 80 years? I don't care. Yeah,
Voldemort probably feels really good about it too. Like, I killed Grindelwald and Grindelwald is in hell like, duh, that loser.
Yeah.
I let him. Anyway,
we then see Abernathy with the vial in his mouth, because that's what he does, before Grindelwald knocks on the glass, which seems to be the signal, and then he blows off the carriage door, and the two auras that have been inside the carriage.
We get to 10.
Yeah, that's where the 10 comes in. And he then climbs into the carriage and sits across from Abernathy.
About that, I realize, but every time I saw this scene, how Abernathy and Spielman
defy gravity? I don't know.
I think it's theoretically they were like on the benches to the side of the door, and the other two oars were in the middle, so it's like...
Okay.
There might also be magic in place. We don't know.
Yeah. They weren't wearing their seatbelts.
Yeah. Kids, wear your seatbelts. While Grindelwald frees Abernathy off the wire, it is then revealed that Abernathy gets a new forked tongue. Although, yeah. I always wondered if, because he had the wire in his mouth, that happened.
Oh.
Because it seems to kind of be
in the
forming around the vial, but I'm not sure.
It says casting a spell that grants... It says retrieves the vial from Abernathy's mouth by the chain, casting a spell that grants Abernathy a new forked tongue.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So... In the movie, it's that also we see that Grindelwald is giving a new tongue to Abernathy. Like, actually, I think it's it reminds us of Voldemort again giving Pettigrew the new hand, but
so the tongue is going to be the downfall of Abernathy.
I think it's already a curse, because why a forked tongue? He can't speak with a forked tongue, so that's not a proper reward.
He's going to be able to talk with Nagini. You just wait and see.
Oh, I didn't thought of that. That's clever.
And Grindelwald's like, you have joined a noble cause, my friend. It's like, well, now he has?
Before
he was
then, he was kind of like,
committed, but all right.
We then like turn to see Spearman fighting against the Chupacabra.
Still.
Yeah, I think the Chupacabra is not very efficient with sucking the blood out, but so Grindelwald takes the Chupacabra off him.
It's
and
a
the
baby.
Chupacabra, yeah. It snuggles up to him, and Grindelwald like coos for a while and treats him like you would treat a like beloved
He's like,
pet. calls him like Antonio, and then says, "You're way too needy," and throws him out of the window.
Did you guys watch Community?
No.
Okay, well, some people who watch Community will know what I'm talking about. In the first episode, when they're like becoming a study group and whatever, Jeff, the main character who always gives like empowering speeches at the end, gives a speech about a pencil. And like, I can make you care about this pencil. Look, if I name it, I forget what he names it, but he like gives it a name and is like, now you care about this pencil. And then he breaks it in half and everybody's like, and he's like, but it's just a pencil.
But I gave it a name. This was a living and breathing being.
Yes, this was living and breathing, but they did give him a name and then immediately throw him out the window. So you're like, aw, Antonio. And then it's like, nope.
Yeah, so my comment was like, if we ever needed more proof that Grindy was a psycho, or is a psycho. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then he throws Spielman out, and it happens a little bit differently in the movie versus the screenplay. In the screenplay, it just says, he blasts Spielman magically through the open door, then tosses a wand after him. In the movie, he kind of slowly like lifts him up and pushes him out, but Spielman's holding onto his arm. And then Grindy drops a wand and then yanks his arm back and Spielman falls. And then in the screenplay, as Spielman falls, he manages to seize the wand and conjures an invisible slowing charm, sinking slowly toward the sea. And in the movie, he grabs the wand out of the air while Grindy makes like the same grabbing motion, which is weird. And then he casts a spell that stops him like right before he hits the water. And then he drops into the water.
But I'm confused because in the movie, I would have actually interpreted that Grindelwald stops to fall, versus what it says in the screenplay, it sounds like Spielman slowed his own fall.
This is confusing.
I think it's the grabbing motion
which is
weird for me, because beside that, I find the movie version more cinematic and more there is more tension, and I totally understood that again Grindelwald is playing with Spielman, which is funny because his name is Spielman, but anyway. But
see, this is something where like watching the movie the first time I didn't like notice him drop the wand and stuff,
but it is quite obvious. You see the arm, and he makes the motion of I totally understood that he was giving Spielman a chance to save himself.
Yeah.
But and he was enjoying this game. But
also like, where'd this wand come from? What is this other wand?
It's one of the ores, I think, no?
Yeah, he grabs one from one of the ores.
Okay. Cause it doesn't say in the screenplay, it just says he drops a wand. It doesn't say that he picked up a wand or anything. I don't know. It's so weird.
That's the end of that scene. Yeah, just this move of Grindy grabbing something.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if it's just him being amused by Spielman trying to grab the wand and playing with him. Like,
or if he's like helping in some way.
I don't know. But if he is, it's one less magic, so that's... That's impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, we've mostly see Grindelwald do wandless magic, don't we?
We see Graves doing it, but yeah, of course it was Grindelwald.
And then like, I mean, some of the stuff he does in this scene, we don't really see how he's doing it with the wand. Like him controlling the wands, it's like, is he using his wand to do that? Like, I don't know. Because we don't see him doing it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the end of the chase scene. And now we're going to go to our boy.
No. because first of all, we get the logo.
That's very good.
So as the carriage breaks through the clouds, we get the opening title in typical Harry Potter fashion, surrounded by the clouds and the theme music. Because that's just trademark.
Yeah. So then it takes us to the Ministry of Magic, London, 3 months later. So we are 9 months after the end of the first movie, because it was 6 months. This first scene was 6 months, and then this is 3 months later. So,
are you saying 6 + 3 = 9? I'm wow. so impressed by your math skills.
Yeah. I mean, listen, some people just, you gotta explain it to them.
Yeah. And I love this this shot showing Whitehall and then yeah. the view of the ministry.
Yeah, the like pan down
yeah.
with the owl.
That's really great.
Yeah, I mean, with that owl is kind of what leads us into the ministry.
Yeah. yeah.
And then we follow the owl until we reach Newt. But what I just noted here, so it's a nice little hint, because obviously in the Harry Potter books, there's Arthur Weasley explaining to Harry when he goes to the Ministry in Order of the Phoenix that they've stopped using owls because it was too messy, and they now use those memos. So obviously we're still in a time now in the Ministry where they're still using owls.
Yeah, and it's really clever to use the owls to give us this view from up yeah. up to down, because in the Potter movies we always see the ministry from a human point of view, so from down yeah. to up. So yeah, it changes the appreciation of the place.
Well, and it's kind of similar to how the fly is used at the beginning of the first scene. It's like, here
yeah.
is just a little creature showing you what's happening.
Yeah,
which, you know, it's a cool move for a yeah. film called Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, that's right.
Makes sense. We also see a fancy new huge statue in the ministry, because it couldn't be the Ministry for Magic if it wasn't with a cool statue.
Fancy I
couldn't,
statue.
Couldn't really make out what that statue was supposed to be. And I suppose there's nothing in the script detailing it.
No.
Okay. Because it's kind of like a big man, but like, you know, obviously we know later statues have political meanings, so I was kind of wondering.
Yeah, yeah, I guess in the it's in the Ministry of Magic, if I'm not getting that wrong, that there is supposed to be this, I don't remember the name, but this statue with the wizard, the witch, the house elves, yeah. the centaur, and the, but that's not, I don't think that's... That?
No,
that's the one that gets destroyed in Order of the Phoenix, where we see Dumbledore using the figures yeah, to deflect spells and stuff.
We could have this one in this time period, because that's not unusual to have a same statue for a couple of decades.
For a couple, but from what I've seen, it looked very different.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely not that.
They have the same like arts and crafts department, so it's not like... I know it's not called like arts that, but whatever.
Like, this is our arts and crafts department. You mean your design team? No. Hey, you mean your construction crew?
No.
No. Arts and crafts.
My mom is an arts and crafts teacher, so that was just...
That's what comes to your head.
Yeah. And I'm at arts and crafts, so whatever.
So then we see Newt, our boy.
And I just have to say, I love those tiles. Especially because I've been to the studio tour, which yeah. I assume, Shannon, you've probably not have had the chance to.
I have, yes.
Oh, okay.
Because I got to go when I studied abroad a few years ago.
Okay, cool.
A while ago now.
So for people who don't know it, all those tiles are painted on, like, they're not real tiles. It's just fake. And it looks so real. And that just kind of throws me every time I see it. I was like, it looks so real, but I know it's just painted. But also, someone painted all of those tiles.
Yeah.
So props to whoever that person is, or
the arts and crafts crew.
Yeah.
The crew. I'm never going to lift that down now, am I?
I just love it. I wish that's what it was called. It's not arts and craft department. You mean the set department? No. Mina Lima, our head of our arts and crafts. Okay.
I've now officially made sure that I'll never get to interview Mina Lima ever again. But yeah, we do get to see Newt.
Yeah, and I love, again, this little description in the script. And for Newt, it say that he's staring abstractly into space.
Yeah.
Whereas what we see is more that he's like bent forwards and looking to the floor, I'd say.
Yeah.
Definitely uncomfortable either way.
Yeah.
And then Pickett pulls a button off of his sleeve and the button falls and rolls away, and then they go chase after it, and it's very cute.
Yeah.
In the screenplay it says, Newt's button rolls away down a corridor. Newt and Pickett watch it go. A beat. They both chase after it. It's very funny.
Yeah, and I love that we just had a very epic chase with Grindelwald. Yeah. And now we have this cute little chase. That's
yeah.
What do you mean that one isn't epic? I think it's still epic. but what definitely happens with that chase, it relaxes and amuses Newt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good going, Pickett.
Yeah. Pickett just knew that he needed some cheering up.
Pickett is the real
Excuse
hero.
Excuse me, sir. That's my emotional support, Pickett.
He's not a bold truckle anymore. He's just Pickett.
Yeah. Pickett's easier to say.
Yeah.
True. So while we see Newt lying on the floor, a pair of shoes appear.
Ooh, very nice shoes.
They are very nice shoes. She has style.
She has.
That's all.
I'm just keeping out of that conversation because I'm definitely not a person who would know anything about anything of that.
So. I don't really know things about shoes. I just know that they're cute shoes.
Yeah, so. Same.
Yeah.
They don't look very comfortable, but...
No, I wouldn't wear the... I don't wear heels really anyway. But she needs them because she's very short. And these boys are very tall.
Yeah, but that's... Yeah, I mean, you've... Yeah, you put it in here. So we see Newt kind of quickly like scrambling up from the floor to talk with Leta.
And the screenplay is like face to face with Leta Lestrange, but they are not face to face. She's like a foot shorter than him.
Yeah.
And I think I remember that the script is describing Leta as beautiful and smiling. And
yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what she is.
Yeah. The script for the rest of this is pretty much spot on.
Okay, yeah. That's good. That we learn that Theseus wants her to be part of the Ministry family.
Yes.
Which Newt kind of mocks, being like, oh, did he now?
Yeah, and I wonder what it means. Does it mean that she started working for the Ministry recently?
Yeah, I would think so.
I'm not even sure if it does mean that she works there. Maybe he just forces her to hang out there.
Oh, okay.
What is her job? Picking up Newt? That's not a job, is it?
Yeah, that was my other question. I wonder, yeah, if she has a job in the Ministry or not. But
it seems like if she does, it's some sort of, you know, secretarial job.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Which I don't appreciate because,
yeah.
Hello, we need women in power. Not yeah. Serafina necessarily, but other women.
Leader for president. The close-ups in this scene make me very uncomfortable.
Same. Yeah.
This is like straight on extreme close-ups on their faces. And I'm like, I get it.
I always kind of lean back automatically when I see yeah. this because I want to distance myself from it. I was like, I'm way
and
too close to someone.
And it happens here and it continues to happen for like the rest of the scene talking to Theseus. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, this is too close. Especially right now. I don't know if you guys are experiencing this, but I watch shows and movies and I'm like, everybody's standing too close. Oh my God.
And also everybody's hugging and shaking hands. Oh, and every yeah, time that happens, so I'm like, you're not supposed to do that.
You just step 6 feet away. Yeah. This is what the rest of our lives is going to be like.
God. But they are interrupted in their conversation by, for better words, cleaning machine.
Yeah.
That deems Newt to be requiring some dusting because it also yes. cleans Newt.
Now that is not in the script.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It just says that they head off along the corridor. The movie gives this cleaning machine. You see a house elf cleaning a window. You see an owl flying. I appreciate the cleaning. Makes me feel better. say yes. And then they just kind of start making small talk about Newt not coming to dinner.
Can I just go back to the cleaning machine?
Yes.
For 1 second. It just, you know, if you have that type of magic, why do you then, if my math's not completely off, 60 years later have Argus Filch cleaning Hogwarts?
If you have that no kind sense. Of magic, why do you have house elves?
Yeah. For the windows that the cleaning machine can't get to.
I guess so.
But, like, seriously, why do you have Argus Filch? Whatever.
I guess the house elves, maybe they built the cleaning machine.
That would be really cool. I want to know.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Like, you know, like, someone new who would know walked in there and be like, oh, who created that, like, cleaning machine? That's really cool. And they would be like, oh, actually, the house elves came up with that. We can't really take credit for it. They would be like,
oh. Someone would take credit.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but...
Some man. Yeah, so then they're just walking and talking.
Yeah, and while they're talking, we learn that Theseus has tried to reach out to his brother and that Newt has been avoiding him and Lita.
Yeah, and I quoted Lita because I think it's the typical weird moment between ex-lovers. She says, he likes spending time with you, and so do I. And yeah, I guess Lita was just trying to make the situation between them just more normal, and you can understand that we can just be friends now. But yeah, no, that's too much for Newt. But yeah, and the look that she's giving him, that's yeah. I understand that Newt is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They kind of like revisit their like Hogwarts days and kind of what they've got into in their time at Hogwarts.
It's definitely like Newt's very uncomfortable just because that's who he is. And Lita's trying to like calm him down, make him relax. And you do definitely get this sort of like, oh, they used to be a thing. Maybe kind of there at least used to be feelings.
Yeah.
And maybe they still are.
Yeah.
But it's awkward.
Like, it's like Lita is trying to remind him that we are friends, and everything that Lita is reminding him is for Newt, it's just we were lovers, so that's awkward. Stop it now.
Yeah, she's trying to be like, oh, everything is fine now. And he's like, no. Nope. Yep.
Yeah, I also put down here the quote where they're saying, there are no strange creatures, only blinkered people.
It's cute.
Which, yeah, the end of them, they say in unison.
Yeah.
It could be a Hagrid quote. I'm sure Hagrid.
And that's where Newt starts to relax just a little bit. He's like, oh, yeah. I'm funny. And then, Lita brings up that he got detention for saying that to Prendergast, who is apparently a professor we know nothing about.
Yeah.
And he says it was about a month's detention, and she says, and I set off a dung bomb under his desk so I could join you. Do you remember?
How romantic.
Yeah.
First of all, I appreciate that they actually made up a new professor.
Yeah,
and not just thrown in a familiar name.
It's true.
But yeah, I mean, if it was just a friendship, that'd be like true friendship, you know?
Yeah.
Join someone in detention for a month.
It's cute. And it sets up that like, they were like, not really. Well, Lita was kind of a troublemaker, but more so they were just, like, not great students, both of them. Like, Lita set off a dung bomb, but, like, she wouldn't have if Newt hadn't already been in detention for mouthing off. Which is an interesting thing to get him detention for, that he said there are no strange creatures, only blinkered people.
I mean, doesn't Snape give Harry detention for, like, 3 months or something, just because him and Ginny dating reminds him of James and Lily, and he's like, you go detention.
Yeah,
it's true. Like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and maybe they are just quoting that because it was a sassy quote, but maybe the whole context was more Yeah, Newt just messing with the teacher, because I'm figuring that Pendergast must have been maybe a DADA teacher or some, at least it could be a lesson where they are.
They're talking about creatures.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking about DADA, because they could talk about beasts and learning to fight them and Newt would be, but no, we don't have to fight them. They are not bad. But yeah.
I know. I would also say that Care of Magical Creature probably only started after Newt's book.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, I don't think that true. Was a subject before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it seems to be like a relative new
thing.
Yeah,
it seems like people just don't know stuff about beasts.
Yeah.
So this guy probably said something about like, that creature is weird. And Newt was like, no, it's not. You're just stupid.
Yeah.
So that's the end of the scenes. So that's the end of the first 10 minutes. So then I thought we'd go over two deleted scenes that probably would have gone here. Well, one of them definitely would have been the beginning of the movie. And so these are on like the DVD. So the first one is Credence Reborn, which, so this one starts with the WB logo in the water. And it slowly comes towards us and moves past and then reveals the baby in the white cloth sinking into the water. Which you can pretty easily tell that it's a baby.
Yeah, you see arms or I don't remember, but yeah.
And then that kind of fades into the shot from the end of the first film where you see the little black wisp of Credence escaping. And then it moves through a stormy New York, getting bigger until it gets to the church where it reforms into Credence. We see his adoption paperwork in the wreckage, which is obviously mentioned in the movie but never seen. And then once he's fully reformed, he finds it and then he screams, but it's all inaudible. And then the second deleted scene is at the docks. So we don't know exactly where this would have been, and it's really short, but it's basically just like, we pan down a large ship, see a crowd of people boarding. We see Credence moving through the crowd. His face is mostly hidden. And he approaches the circus people, talks to them, but you don't hear anything. And then they let him in, see some magical creatures, and then he boards the boat with them. So that, I mean, those might have come like one after another originally, or maybe the boat one was like after a couple other scenes or something. But the first scene especially, I think, should have been in the movie.
Yeah, agree.
Although I'm not sure if it would give too much away to have it straight at the beginning. Like, I agree it should be there, but like,
it could have been a flashback, I think.
Yeah.
Like, maybe when Credence is talking to someone about, you know, reforming and finding his adoption paperwork. Because it is kind of odd that, like, we see the church kind of destroyed in the first movie, and then suddenly in the second movie he's talking about having his adoption paperwork, and it's like, where, since when? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Don't you know, Shannon?
Yeah. I don't know anything. And then it's obviously with the shot of the baby, it is implying much more that that's Credence, since it, like, fades from the baby to the Obscurus.
Yeah. No, that's what I think. I totally see Rowling writing this scene to be the opening scene, because it's the perfect scene to introduce the main plot line of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's far better than the what we get in the movie to introduce this storyline, which is a quite boring dialogue that will be discussed in the next episode, but it's not, maybe not boring, but definitely confusing, because it's a lot of information given by characters that we don't know. And so but in this scene it's definitely, and the two scenes, it's show don't tell, like so that's more, and it put Credence in the beginning of the movie, and you immediately understand that this movie is about him. So
yeah. But then that's the title of the movie is not about him. So.
Sure, but that's, I don't think it's, probably the other maybe they chose the title of the movie when they chose to focus more on Grindelwald.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the titles never really had that big of a connection, do they?
Yeah. Yeah.
The titles are always a red herring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the first film wasn't that much about where to find Fantastic Beasts.
No.
Yeah, we don't care for the in the Potter movie to have a title who don't relate to the first scene. That's not a problem. But so I really think that's the first big error from the editing team to choose to don't keep this opening scene, even if I love the chasing scene of Grindelwald. And it's good to be right in the action, but this first scene with Credence is so powerful, and Ezra Miller is a genius, of course. But
and it could have been so powerful to like cut from him screaming to just like 6 months later, and then like the escape scene. I can't say that like the pacing would have worked perfectly, but like it's just such a good scene, and it just really helps explain stuff. And you still could have had like the explanation that we get like in the next scene and stuff, the, you know, kind of that we know Credence is alive and stuff, but like this just would have helped the audience, I think.
And like I said at the beginning of the episode, you have this music, this theme, and in this scene it's directly connected to the baby in the water, which will be the recurring motif of the movie. So disconnected this music from this motif is not a good storytelling choice.
Yeah. Like, I also get that the movie's really long, though, and, like, you can't have every scene, but I wish they'd had this one.
I'm fine with the at the dock scene being cut, because...
Yeah, like, I think
really that much
would have kind of helped to be like, oh, see, like, he talked to the circuit, but, like, it's not as necessary. Like, my question about, like, how Credence got to France with the circus was more about, like, how did he reform and get his adoption paperwork, and less about, like, how did he physically get into a circus, because that's not that hard.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he walked up to them and was like, hey, I'm a wizard. And they were like, all right, come on. Hey, I'm an orphan wizard. Can I come? And they were like, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I can turn into smoke.
Yeah.
And destroy everything.
And they were like, all right, chill out.
I think that does it for our first date dive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So no Newt Case or Time Turner while we're doing these.
Yeah, because...
at least for now.
Yeah.
We've been here almost 2 hours.
Yeah. Those episodes tend to get long enough anyways, and
And we are talking about Beast, and we are talking about past,
I guess. Yeah, so.
Yeah. I mean, we've definitely talked about a Chupacabra.
Yeah, we almost did a second Chupacabra, and a little bit of a Homunculus Newt Case there. I think I'll look more into Homunculus and maybe be able to talk about that on a future episode when Credence is back.
So for the podcast question... for this episode, what do you think about the magic that Grindelwald uses? Is it just an advanced creative magic from his part, or is it due to the Elder One? So we'd love to hear from you. So drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And you can also, and we wish that you leave us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, and those social media outlets can be found on Twitter and Instagram. We are @SpeakBeastie. On Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie. We're also on Tumblr, and there we are, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And don't forget, you can always support us on Patreon at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. I'm Oriol.
I'm Marjolaine.
I'm Shannon. Case closed.